Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Coal. Coal is a major concern for climate change activists. COP26 recently, there were many hard remarks about coal and its coal-generating electricity plants around the world. There were pledges toward the end of COP26, chiefly by the coal-using nations of China and India. However, I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to take us to China, an analysis by an Australian expert, and peak coal in China. Gregory, a very good evening to you. This is a revelation to me. Peak coal. What does it describe? And right now, what are the Chinese doing about it? What can they do about it? Good evening, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, the Chinese peak coal is the period at which the maximum amount of Chinese coal has been revealed, and it is now they've now gone into that reserve, and it's now in a declining reserve structure. So basically, China is in falling coal reserves and falling coal production. It will attempt to accelerate the extraction of its dwindling coal reserves in order to get the most out of the next few years so it can get some economic growth, not just for power generation, but also for the manufacture of other products, steel in particular, fertilizers most definitely, and also for the amount of energy required to make renewable energy resources such as windmill vanes and so on for wind-powered electrical generation.
You note from an Australian scientist, David Archibald, in the Wentworth Report, November of 2021, within days, the quote, cheap coal has been a Chinese Communist Party's source of strength, enabling it to threaten most of their neighbors and bully others as far as Lithuania. But peak coal has arrived on schedule for the Chinese, and they are now staring into the abyss of rapidly declining coal production. He then gives us some numbers. Coal consumption at 4,000 million tons per annum, is the energy equivalent of 50 million barrels of oil per day, which in turn is half of the world's daily oil consumption. The cost of resource extraction tends to rise strongly once half the resource is extracted. The Chinese are halfway through their initial coal endowment and are now entering a world of hurt, end quote. Gregory, these numbers, are these apparent to China's adversaries? That would be the United States and NATO and Japan. Do they know these numbers? Because this means that that the sands of time are running out on the Chinese aggression.
Yes, I mean, I think this is well known. China's dependence on foreign oil and gas imports, as well as on foreign coal imports, have been evident for a long time. What's disguising it or confusing, if you like, China's existential dependency on imported energy at the moment is the fact that there is a decline in the amount of energy needed in the PRC in some respects. It's producing less steel, therefore it requires less coal for that. Its exports of energy-dependent products, including, of course, the big solar panels and wind vanes and so on, all of this are declining because of increasing costs. So the demand is declining. And in fact, around the COP26 discussions, the PRC made a virtue out of its clean aspirations, indicating that it would reduce its dependence on coal over the coming years and therefore reduce its outflow of carbon and so on. The reality is that this is making a virtue out of the inevitable. China has less of those resources. It is more vulnerable. This is why, for example, the PRC was so anxious to strike a deal with the Taliban so that they could ultimately get their gas and oil pipelines across from Iran, across Afghanistan to Xinjiang, and therefore into the People's Republic of China. But this is almost a last desperate gamble, and it's probable that they will never, ever see those pipelines come across in the volume required to save the People's Republic of China and its energy needs. The real salvation for the PRC in its energy requirements is going to come from solar, and that's going to be space-collected solar if they can master the technology from their space program, and that is to have a space collection of solar energy beamed down to Earth. And that's regarded as feasible possibly as soon as within 10 years. The question is whether China can really last the next 10 years.
There is an answer on Earth, but they've fallen behind. I thought their nuclear power building program was well advanced. I thought they were building plenty to take care of the renewable demands of the future. But your report indicates, and the Australian scientist indicates, that as fast as they're building, they can't catch up with what they need from coal. So the simple math here, Gregory, is that they're at war with the world. They're at the war. This is a war versus everything. And yet they can't afford it. They don't have the energy to sustain this. Does that explain any of their conduct these days? Why do they turn on Australia over something as what you'd have to say fleeting as the origins of the virus, knowing they need Australian coal?
Well, the exposure by Australia of the reality that the virus, the COVID-19 virus, originating and spread from the People's Republic of China is possibly enough to tip the scales against Xi Jinping and damage his credibility at this particular time, which is the run-up to the 20th Party Congress in October next year, at which Xi desperately hopes that he can be elected for an unprecedented third term as General Secretary of the Communist Party, and that would make him the ruler of China until he dies. And that would establish him as one of the three leaders of great stature after Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping. And of course, Xi models himself on Mao Zedong and hates Deng Xiaoping. So he wants to, if you like, get back to Maoism, reverse the effects of Deng Xiaoping, who opened up China to a capitalist economy. And he wants to bring the PRC back into tight party control and tight social control so that basically it becomes a Maoist state once again. That means he will preside inevitably over the decline of the Chinese economy, the People's Republic of China economy. It will reduce it to largely an internal circulation economy. In other words, one which is less dependent on exports and less dependent on imports. And if he's going to be less dependent on imports, that automatically means, first and foremost, a reduction in food imports and a reduction in energy imports. And the only way that that can work is if the population of the PRC declines dramatically, even faster than normal.
Right. Food. You also mentioned that the Australian analysis includes food. China uses coal to create nitrogenous fertilizer, which they need for their grain production. But their grain production, these numbers are all new to me. I would say the summary is their grain production is exceedingly inefficient in comparison to Australia's grain production. So they're using more coal to produce less grain. That's another losing formula. And if they can't feed their people, where is order?
Well, that's right. I mean, already we see that the PRC is existentially dependent on the imports of US-grown agricultural products, particularly foods, particularly soy. And in the grain areas, the PRC is nowhere near achieving the kinds of efficiencies that Australia has, even with the massive dependency on nitrogenous fertilizers, but with an unstable water table throughout much of the PRC. When I say unstable, where there is a stable water table, it's largely a polluted water table. So they're really hampered on all fronts. And the introduction of energy-derived fertilizers, coal-derived fertilizers, for example, is not doing the trick as it should. So the only answer is A, for more imported grains to be acquired, B, people to eat less, and C, the population to dramatically reduce, which it is doing, but not rapidly enough.
Is she aware of all this? Is this a source of his autocracy, his authoritarianism, his tyranny, his bullying, because he sees these numbers?
There's no question that he sees the numbers, and he recognizes that if he is to keep the state under control and to keep his own control of the Communist Party, he has to demonstrate unwavering strength and power. He has to be ruthless with his adversaries within the party. He has to suppress what is already, if you like, a civil war within the Communist Party of China. To do that, he's you know, arresting more and more people. He's clamping down on more and more opponents. And of course, he's also faced with the private sector, which has had way too much money for his taste for too long, which gives them a lot of autonomy, ability to criticize, freedom of movement, and uncontrollability of the economy. So he has to clamp down on all of that. And to do so in a land of diminishing resources, he must speak more loudly and punish more rapidly and more efficiently. So we can see a direct correlation between the increase in his wolf warrior diplomacy abroad and his bullying tactics at home, with almost compensating for his declining real strength.
The Australian coal. Let's return to something fundamental here. My understanding is that Australia's coal is the best in the world, and it has a port, Port Newcastle, I believe, where it's ready to sell that coal to whoever shows up, and it's been selling it to India, it's been selling it to other parts of Asia. Does China need that coal? Can it last without that coal, Gregory?
Well, it'll find lower quality coal resources from elsewhere, but that, of course, means it's less efficient, and you're actually having to burn more, shall we say, pollutant coal to compensate for the lack of the high quality coal from Newcastle. So, yes, he can do without it, but it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be expensive, and it's going to be highly pollutant. What she has been doing has been doubling down on his political assets within Australia, and this, we're now seeing this great schism in Australia between the hostile anti-China elements within society and his profoundly sycophantic supporters, among people like Bob Carr, the former foreign minister and former premier of the state of New South Wales, who parrots pro-Xi Jinping, pro-PRC, all the time. He's saying, well, the rise of the PRC as the world's greatest economy is now inevitable. I mean, he's defying common sense, but he's becoming even more vocal. And I guess he's trying to justify the fact that he has hitched his wagon and his payroll, if you like, his expenses to Beijing. So there are people like that who are really coming out, including the Premier of Victoria, who has signed a Belt and Road Initiative deal with the PRC. They're all basically continuing to hope and pray that China will continue to give Australia export orders. And the reality is that it can't and won't. It's we've talked about peak coal. What we've seen is a peak in the PRC's demand for Australian iron ore as well.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defence and Foreign Affairs, Peak Coal in China. Countdown. We're headed to the trouble in Ethiopia in the north. fighting, led by the Prime Minister Abe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.